you know, up until that point, like, even though I identified as polyamorous, like, I still struggled for my first experience when someone else was also in love with someone else at the same time, and, like, really struggled with what that meant and how I felt about that. So it hadn't been easy up to that point, but then, like I saw that, and it was just like these fireworks went off inside of me, and I didn't understand. I was like, that, like, my body shouldn't be feeling this way to seeing this. It's never felt this way before.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
That's perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's
all we
needed.
Wait.
That's close enough. That's close enough.
It's fine. No, that was perfect.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're recording live at our first ever patron-only retreat in beautiful Lake Tahoe, California.
Hashtag sorry neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. So we've been spending the weekend with some of our amazing Patreon supporters, and we've asked them to submit questions, come up with questions for us to answer live on this episode. We do have a quick disclaimer for all of you sitting here in front of us. We're not recording video of this episode, but we are recording audio. So if you don't want to be recorded, sit there silently and, like, pantomime cheering or whatever it is.
Or don't use your most identifiable cheer that you have under your
voice,
belt,
or
if you
something.
Don't want people to recognize your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have, like, a signature cheer that everyone knows, it's like, oh, yeah, that's Jace's cheer. I know that one. You know, you use a different one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we got some questions that y'all sent in advance. Depending on how we're doing on time, we might also have more time if anyone thinks of stuff during this. So you can kind of keep that in the back of your head. We'll let you know, you know, as we're there, we'll kind of look at the time and also see how cold it is, because it does get cold here very quickly once the sun goes down.
Yeah.
And we're recording outside. Mm-hmm. Is this our second ever episode recording outside?
See, immersion.
Yeah.
Dogs.
There's going to be dogs.
Woodland creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We recorded one other episode outside just because we wanted to once, like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're doing it again.
It's like, it's the way podcasting was supposed to be.
I don't think I agree with that.
No, back when we were all tribal people and we'd gather around the podcasters and they would,
that's
you
true.
Know,
they would tell their stories.
Tell their stories.
That's perfect. Okay.
So should we just jump right into a question?
Yeah, we can just jump right into it. And so, you know, we had people submit their questions and people could decide whether or not they wanted themselves to read it on the recording, or whether they wanted someone else to read it, or whether they wanted to be totally anonymous.
Pretty much everyone said that they wanted to read it.
Shut up, dog.
Uh-huh.
Anyone know that? What is it?
The Natalie D video?
Yeah.
Shut up, dog. Where you come from, dog? Okay.
Yeah, I'm making some wiener wings.
Yeah.
Shut up, dog.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's not important. What's important is the first person that's going to come up and ask a question, which is Kenzie.
Woo!
We got it. We got what you said.
Yeah, because you actually have two, so this is your first
come
one.
Come right there at that corner. Don't come all the way up on the stage, please.
Oh. Whoa! Cancel clear. Oh my god.
We invited you guys here.
You're absolutely right, you did.
You did.
Thank you for reminding us of that.
This is on my credit card.
You're absolutely right.
As I will explain, it's most important that our Zoom recorder hears you. So that's why.
Okay.
That's why. If you're up here, then you're like talking into my wine and like that's not good.
Okay.
You know, just so that I think. Anyway, there you go.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So this is something I've been struggling a little bit with my current relationships, combating sort of scarcity mentality in relationships, sort of twofold, both the anxiety with partners you don't necessarily get much time with to really like make the best of the time that you have and maybe having more trouble when things go wrong, or the expectations that relationships don't stick around, so things not working out in the moment, it's the only chance for it to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea that the anxiety around needing things to work out right when it's happening, because you're not going to get much more.
Mm.
Are you also talking about, like, scarcity in terms of your time with everyone as well?
Yeah.
Okay, just having a limited amount of it.
Yeah, on the being on the receiving end of that.
I see.
And the way it affects the importance of the time you spend together, sometimes negatively.
Totally. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like, it's like the stakes are also higher because it feels like there's a scarcity of time. And so,
And if it doesn't go as perfectly as you want it to in the moment, then that can be challenging. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your question. We'll ask you if we have
more clarifying
questions
about it.
You can sit down. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to you, I suppose. I just thought you'd be more comfortable. Gosh, we really should have figured this out beforehand.
No, we thought of everything, but unfortunately, we did not.
I feel like at least recently, I feel like with my clients that I work with, I tend to go through phases of where, for some reason, kind of organically, like the same piece of advice keeps coming up. And recently, like the past couple months or so, I found myself telling people a lot, like, it's okay, like you probably have more time than you think that you have, at least as far as in the sense of the stakes, I suppose. Like, it's okay, like this relationship doesn't need to get escalated right now. You know, maybe even this fight doesn't need to get resolved right now in this moment. Like, you don't need to make these plans right now. And I feel like we're so conditioned, at least particularly in the West, we're so conditioned that it's always, you know, time is money, right? And so it's like, there's no sense in dragging your feet and wasting time and taking your time, really. So, I mean, I think there's something there in that, like, at least I find for me, when I feel myself feeling kind of like that time anxiety, is letting myself slow down and breathe and really examine, like, okay, like, what are the things here in this relationship that really are truly time sensitive and, like, I need to figure it out now, or I need to tell this person this now, and what can actually have some time and some space and some air around it. Like, what's not all going to fall apart if there's some time there? And I think these two will attest that I'm, like, really terrible at that in the rest of my life. I'm definitely in the rest of my life thinking, like, everything needs to be figured out right now or else it's all going to fall apart, which is not true. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's my part of that.
I also wanted to just add that I definitely relate to having that feeling that that's something that, especially earlier on in my relationship with Dedeker, that was something that we experienced a lot and that I experienced a lot because our time that we got to spend together was more limited then. And so there was this sort of, like, every time we get to see each other, whether that's only once a week or whether it's because she's out of the country for 4 months and I don't get to see her till after that, or, you know, kind of whatever it was, and it changed over time. But it was, there is that temptation to be like, everything has to be meaningful. Like, and these are the last memories we get. Like, they all have to matter. And the irony of it, of course, was that led to a lot more stress and, like, a lot less enjoying that actual time that we had together. And it's funny because I think that I think being in a relationship a little bit longer helps to just give a little more perspective. But even then, just the other day, I was packing because I was coming back to the States before Dedeker, like a week before, and we started getting a little bit stressed about, like, everything we need to fit in and, like, everything we want to do together before we're apart for a week, and then we're going to be together again for a month, and that still kicked in, like that. I don't know if it's an instinct, but, like, that sort of reflex to want to make everything precious and meaningful, which actually just made us really stressed out. And luckily, because we'd been there and had acknowledged it in the past, we were able to say to each other, wait a minute, we're doing that thing, huh? Like, we're going to see each other in a bit. And even if that were a longer amount of time, be like, we're going to see each other. Let's just enjoy the time that we have, even if that means we're not going to do all 10 of these things that were on our to-do list, you know, that we haven't gotten to yet. That our time together is more important than being able to say we did a specific thing, you know?
What resonated for me about this question was that I really hear what you're saying, and like all of these things about time being this scarce thing that we all have. And I know for myself, I often try to put so many things into like a week or into a day even. And I feel as though I really need to get shit done and be there for everyone who needs me in that week, which includes them, which includes my nesting partner who wants a certain amount of time with me, which includes my friends, which includes time for myself to be able to go to yoga and like do things that matter to me that help me reset. And I know that it's incredibly important to let yourself off the hook sometimes if you don't get that time or if you don't give the time that everyone is requesting of you. Yeah, that's a thing that I tend to need to remind myself a lot is like, let myself off the hook. Because it is really impossible sometimes, and you just simply cannot always do everything that everyone expects or wants from you. And that is okay. It really is. So I guess I just urge you to like know if people are there for you and care about you, then they'll understand that maybe at times you need to just be like, you know what, I'm going to drop this ball right now and be there for myself. And that to me is the most important thing at this moment. And please respect that.
You don't have to be making coffee for everybody all the time.
We appreciate it. And I'm sure they do too. Yeah.
You just make it for yourself and be selfish. Mm. I just wanted to clarify a little bit. Are you finding that it's a case where it's like, you know, myself and this certain partner, we only get so much time together. And so that means that it all has to be like special and meaningful and positive, and we can't dig into any negative things? Or is it something different, more along the lines of just feeling kind of anxious about it?
I guess it's a little bit of both. Not necessarily that it all has to be positive, but it all has to be like connective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we can like processing like stuff with us doing work in the relationship
right. Still
feels like a good use of my time.
Mm-hmm,
Right. Yeah.
I guess my question would be like. Just as kind of like a thought experiment is like, what amount of time would I have to spend with a partner where it would feel okay to not have 100% of the time be connective?
Are you asking me?
I mean, I'm asking kind of theoretically, but you don't have to have an answer for that. But
yeah,
you know, cause I think that's kind of funny. Cause like, especially the word in your question, you said specifically like, you know, I don't want to squander the little time that we have. And I think that's like a wonderful sentiment that like, of course, I don't think any of us want to squander the time that we have with our partners, but to a certain extent on like a day-to-day basis, we kind of do because of like adulting or whatever, you know? And so that's my question.
Like, I just want to play video games tonight. Like, let's
can I please
that.
Just squander our time for once? I guess that's kind of my question is like, where's the tipping point where it like, for some reason it feels more comfortable having not 100% of time being super connective or meaningful. And I don't know, maybe like thinking about that will bring some insight possibly.
And I think there can be beauty in like the little things in those times where you're just hanging out together and I don't know, playing video games together or being in a room together with one another.
Squandering your time together.
But I think it doesn't need to be a negative thing. It can be like a beautiful thing to just, you know, enjoy the minutiae. Yeah.
Well, I think it is one of those funny things too that, you know, especially when we first start dating someone and maybe we only see them once a week or once every other week or once a month or something like that, that we're kind of always like, gosh, I just wish I had more time. And then on the other side of it, we'll have that partner that we end up moving in with. We're like, basically all of our time is squandered because you're having to live a life, right? You're having to maintain a household. You're having to just do your normal stuff. And so it is kind of this weird thing where on the one hand, we're like, God, if only we had more time. And then when we have all the time, then we waste all of it because it's like, well, nothing special
but
anymore.
What is wasted time, you know?
Well, yes. I guess that's my point, is that none of it's wasted in either
way. Multi-philosophery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is time? Multi-existentialism.
What is time?
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
Do you feel full? Yeah. Does that feel feeling
awesome.
Okay?
That's thank you.
Thank you. All right. Okay, yeah, do we want to move on to our next question?
Yeah, let's
do it.
I think so, yeah. So, Aaron, you are the next one.
So, you three have run Multiamory for over three years now.
Almost four.
almost
It'll
four.
Be four next month.
So that's awesome. Congratulations.
We're turning four.
I know.
So along with, like, that also goes with the development of this thriving community. Like, we're all here, and you all have your busy, like, polyamorous lives as well. In that same time, I've seen a number of community leaders get burnt out from all the work that they do, and all the work that they do to, like, get things going and keep things running. What tips can you give us on preventing that burnout? How have you kept things going strong all this time? We kind of all know that you three are poly superheroes, but damn.
Oh, stop.
Only when Anthony makes us into them.
Yeah, only when we're drawn as superheroes.
Yeah, exactly. If I can start off that one, I really would attribute the lack of burnout to the two people sitting next to me. And I think just the fact that it's three of us makes a huge difference. And that we also have finally been able to, like, delegate tasks to others and, you know, have an amazing social media wizard. And he's also our assistant. And then, you know, the lovely Mauricio who edits everything. And then, you know, all of you lovely people who helped us plan this retreat.
All our moderators for the Patreon community.
Yeah, that is a huge help. Like, it does take a village to raise a child, and this is our baby podcast child. So that, I think that makes a world of difference. And just when any one of us is like, oh my God, this is so tough, I don't know if I can keep doing this, then the other two will kind of build them back up.
And it has happened. These two were actually just reminiscing the other day about a time.
That was yesterday.
Yeah, like yesterday? 2 days ago?
Oh, on the drive up.
Yeah. That they were reminiscing about a time a few months into us doing this podcast when I, like, broke down being like, What are we even doing? Like, no one's going to listen to this. This
Why are
is
we
terrible.
Doing this?
Like, what
are we shouldn't doing? Be doing this.
Yeah, like, who are we to say anything?
But having the two of them for those moments for me, for them to be like, no, stop it. Like, come on, we've gotten some people already who have said this has been helpful for them. Mm-hmm. You know, let's keep going with it. And I think that having three people, as much as that also adds layers of complication to it, like, really has helped a lot to get through those times when you have that crisis of like, who am I to run anything? Like, you know?
Well, those are all better answers than I was going to give.
I doubt that.
Well, because
it was like caffeine and booze. Like,
no, I was like, we made another podcast where we drink the entire time. Like, that became our outlet.
Hashtag watch drug Bible study.
I don't know. I guess that's the thing is like, burnout, it happens, you know? And I think that, I think that when we first started this, first of all, a couple things. Like, when we first started this, it was just kind of like, let's make a podcast. And that was about the extent of what our dream was like, we're just going to make a podcast together.
It was a pipe dream.
Yeah. And then, then the community kind of sprang up. Like I don't feel comfortable taking credit for, like, starting the community. It's like the community kind of, like, showed up and, like, kind of started itself and, like, cobbled itself together. And I think, I was talking about this earlier today, that then kind of retroactively we had to be like, oh gosh, like, what are our intentions for this? Who is this going to serve? How are people best going to be served? Like, what kind of space do we want to create? That it wasn't like we started out with this vision of, like, we're going to create a community, but that's become such an integral part. And honestly, you know, the podcast and everything that goes into making a podcast, the editing and the writing and the producing and the marketing and reaching out to guests and helping to run the community and making all these decisions, you know, it's so much work, but the community itself also, I find to be very life-giving as well. Like, that's kind of the ironic thing. And I guess, honestly, like, I've never had a child, and I know some of you do have children, and so I don't want to offend anyone by comparing our podcast to having a baby, because I know it's probably just a fraction of the work. but this is probably the closest thing I'm going to have to having a baby, honestly, are these projects, like, writing the book or, like, having the podcast. And so I think similarly, it's kind of like, this is so much work, but then seeing it grow and seeing good things happen, or even seeing disagreements get worked out, or seeing a community evolve and thrive, that in itself is really validating and affirming, and helps to keep us going even when there's burnout, you know.
Absolutely.
Because we know that, like, I don't know, someone's listening, I guess.
Hopefully, yeah. know. Yeah, so thank you all for being there for us when we most need it, because we definitely read your reviews and go on to the Multiamory patron-only Facebook group and, you know, see what you have to say on there, and that makes a huge, huge difference to us. So
yeah, we wouldn't be here in Tahoe by ourselves recording this 4 years later without, like, any of you sitting out there. That'd be really weird.
Every single one of you,
Yeah.
I don't know, that sounds kind of fun.
Can you talk about...
And super random.
Can you talk about the podcast video game you and your brother wanted to make?
What?
Oh, yeah. So my brother also has a podcast, and he is also an agent for podcasts who do live tours and things like that. Someday we'll be big enough that he'll represent us, I hope.
He's been a wonderful, very generous source of knowledge.
He's
advice,
been great, yeah. But he and I were talking about making a video game about making a podcast. And the way the video game goes is... So you buy the video game, and it's a pretty expensive one because it comes with a lot of extra peripherals like microphones and things like that that you plug into your computer.
Oh, my God.
And you press the record button, and you record a podcast, and then you see like a ratings thing or a downloads thing that just kind of behaves randomly, but generally is just very low. And that's it. And nothing happens. And you just keep talking into like a black screen forever. And that's all that ever happens.
And then maybe if you played the game for 6 months straight, maybe something happens.
Right. But just how...
It sounds like a riveting game.
But just how much it can feel like talking into this black box. Yeah. And so... At first, it was like getting any of those little things, like getting a review or getting an email or getting a tweet from somebody or something like that. And then it was, oh my gosh, people are actually joining the Patreon and joining the Facebook group. And like, oh my gosh, like people actually want us to do another thing. Or like people say, hey, we want to contribute to you doing a tour. Or right, like it just then grew without us even knowing kind of what we were expecting or like what the goal was. It's not like this community we were talking about, that I felt like we made that as sort of a, maybe people would like a space where they could talk to us. And then it's turned into a place where all of you talk with each other.
And don't
like,
talk to, don't again, really talk to
you
us.
Don't even need us. Yeah.
Right? Where like you are the community. Out. Like all of you are the reason why that community is something special.
Yeah.
And why that's something that people talk about how meaningful it's been in their lives. It's not because like I get to text Jason, Dedeker, and Emily. It's because I found all of you.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess that's part of it. I know we're getting a little philosophical and not just answering your question, but thank you for that. But I think also just being willing to adapt and like having people help us and having people tell us when we could be doing stuff
asking
better.
Asking for help. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a big part, is like having multiple people on a team who are proactive contributors. I mean, I think it is possible, like, one person steps forward, has this vision for creating something, and they can enroll other people and get people excited about that. But
they probably even would need other people to help.
Yes, that's the thing, is I think being able to find a way to balance the load to a certain extent, where there's enough people excited to kind of bring that drive and that passion to it, so that it's not just one person's passion fueling the whole thing.
Yeah.
As like noble and romantic as that sounds.
Yeah. And I think we didn't do this one, but it probably helped to be independently wealthy. Like that'd probably make it easier.
Yeah, it does help.
I'm pretty sure that helps most things.
Yeah. If you didn't also have to have a job or like, do other things, that'd be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my tip.
Yeah.
Pro tip.
Or, make a podcast either that's directly about sex or about true crime. That's the other tip that we found make it a lot easier to launch, apparently, these days.
Yeah, that's not really about community building, but if you want a successful podcast, if you could have, like, a true crime sex podcast, you've got
a true
it made.
Sex crimes podcast? That sounds awful to listen
to. That's really...
To.
Well, that is the content of a lot of the
but
true
it's true.
Crime
a lot
podcasts.
Of the true crimes podcasts are awful to listen to at the same time, so...
Not because they're bad people. We love you guys who do all those podcasts. We just mean the stories are awful. All right, we should move on before we just
Let's continue. Let's keep this ball rolling.
So our next person is Mandy.
Okay. I'm an English teacher, so I wrote this like an English teacher.
This was great.
I've recently been reading Kevin Patterson's book, Love's Not Colorblind, and I'm finding it very interesting and enlightening as a white polyamorous person. and also as a committee member of an E&M group, ethical non-monogamy group in the LA area. In the section Fostering Inclusivity for White Folks, Patterson says that if we're going to foster diversity in our polyamorous communities and in our social circles, we have to go straight to the source of what causes the divisions in the first place. This process, first and foremost, requires introspection. I believe that introspection is a continual process, and I'm quite introspective about these issues myself, but I'm wondering what that process has been like for you three so far. So in question format, as white polyamorous people, what has your process of introspection regarding race been like? Have there been any challenging incidences within the polyamorous community that have made you reconsider your internal biases? What do you think are the most important steps you have taken or can take to make the polyamorous community more inclusive for POC, people of color?
Okay. That's great. Thank you for that.
Could I? So there's you know, a couple different moving parts to this question. Is it okay if I comment on the introspection thing first, actually? First of all, has anyone here read Kevin Patterson's book? I know we interviewed him.
Got a few hands out there.
Definitely, if you haven't, definitely go get it. It's phenomenal. It's fantastic. And very, very accessible also at the same time. The introspective process has been really interesting. And I think what I've seen with a lot of like white peers of mine, that definitely within the past couple of years, I think for a lot of people has been the first time that people have been confronted with having to think about issues behind race and racial inclusivity. Because I think that for a long time, for a lot of white people, even liberal white people, there was a lot of complacency around kind of the sense of like, if I'm not actively being racist, like if I'm not using racial slurs or if I'm not discriminating against somebody, then like, it's really not my problem. You know, I can say that those people are bad, but like, that's kind of where the buck stops. And I think that that was a really common sentiment for quite a while. I think that that's definitely what I embodied for several years up until just a few years ago, until that introspective process actually started. And I found for me since then, like, you know, since at least I've personally started broadening like the types of voices that I consume. So for instance, you know, following Twitter accounts of people of color or people who are not like me, people who are non-cis, you know, people who are queer, things like that, that I've found something that's been true for me, that's been true in my relationships in general, that coming from kind of a mindfulness background, that if I feel discomfort or if I feel a need to get defensive about something, like that's actually a great signal to keep looking within. And I think that what we see online right now is a lot of like, if people feel defensive about being called out on something, it's a signal to, I need to defend myself, you know, and I need to talk about why this isn't true. I need to invalidate this person's experience, or I need to make sure that people know that I'm a good white person, for instance. And I think for me, it's been changing that process of realizing like, no, if those feelings come up or I feel like, well, I'm not like that, or I shouldn't be called out for this, like that's a key to go inward and to introspect. Is that a verb? Introspect is
introspective.
For a long time now, we've been fans of adamandeve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's multi, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I. I'll use it as a verb.
All right, go. You can do whatever you want.
You know,
to introspect, yeah.
Yeah, to introspect even further into, like, well, what is it that makes me feel defensive right now? Like, could my actions be looked at very differently from someone from a very different background of mine? And then also realizing that it's kind of like my discomfort or sense of defensiveness, as a person who lives in relative privilege, those feelings don't really matter, you know, like they don't really matter. Like I don't get to unload them onto somebody because they don't really matter. They don't really change things unless I internalize them, look at them, and then actually use that to fuel changing my behavior, or doing something different or something more proactive. So that's my little monologue on introspection. Sorry for wandering a little bit there. As far as like, you know, things happening in the polyamorous community or things that like we've tried to focus on as a podcast of trying to make things more accessible and more inclusive. You know, obviously, like as we build our platform, trying to continually to highlight voices of people who are not like us, you know, continually trying to bring on guests who are people of color when researching guests specifically. Like I know for me, like if there's a particular topic I want to bring a guest on for, taking kind of the extra step of instead of going to like the most famous person or maybe the person who shows up first in the Google search result is like, is there anyone who's like basically not a straight white man talking about this or not a white person who is talking about this topic who we could bring on to the podcast and help kind of center their voice for a while as well. As far as like steps in the future, definitely like our staff on the podcast is still relatively small. I definitely see a future where, again, as we're able to outsource like production a little bit more, something that I loved about Kevin Patterson's book was just the great importance of bringing in people of color into positions of leadership or administration on your project. Even if you don't think your project has anything to do with race or anything to do with inclusivity, like still doing it anyway to bring that perspective in. And so, you know, I also envision like if we got more of a production team, like, you know, bringing in people who are not like us to be line producers or who are on more of our marketing team, things like that. Something that I would also like to implement, and I think we're actually pretty close to being able to implement this, would be creating a model wherein we could pay our guests, which is not a standard podcast model at all. So not only paying guests for their time and for being able to share their experience, but also setting that at a sliding scale where people who come from multiply marginalized identities could receive more potentially. So, I mean, that's just some of like many, 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 many things that can be done. But I think as far as like practical things, one of my biggest takeaways from Kevin Patterson's book was, and I think this kind of ties in a little bit to Oren's question on community building, is just having the foresight to bring in people not like you at a leadership, at a foundational, like creative level on a project. You know, even if your first instinct is to kind of think like that, you know, that that's not necessarily needed.
Yeah.
So sorry, I talked a long time.
It's all good. When Ruby Bowie Johnson was on the podcast and I asked her the question, is there something that we as white or white passing can do, like what from your perspective is something that we can do to be more inclusive? And the thing that she said, which was so wonderful, is it's not up to us, it's not up to people of color or anyone in a marginalized community to tell you, the privileged people, what to do. It's up to you to figure that out. And that was a moment for me where I was like, fuck, okay, yes, you're abso-fucking-lutely right. And I really need to check myself. Like, I am Mexican and Native American and a bunch of different things, but I am very white passing and have lived in that privilege my entire life. So I definitely know, like, I have to check myself all the time with ever thinking like, okay, I don't know what I should be doing. I'm trying to look to someone else to tell me what I should be doing. But instead, the question that I should be asking is, what more reading can I do? What can I do more to be an ally? What can I do more to, you know, educate myself about all of these things that I need to be better about? And I guess, yeah, with the podcast as well, that's something I think that we have continued to hopefully step up and become better about. And again, like, the community has told us, all of you have told us when we have fallen by the wayside in that way or in any way, like, hey, you said something that I didn't appreciate, or you said something that was triggering. And for all of you to be able to tell us that is incredibly important as well, regardless of what it is. And so, yeah, I think just the continued education that keeps happening is something to hopefully move us all forward as a community, and for the three of us to continue, I guess, making the community at large more inclusive.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you both already said so much of what we talked about after we read this question. Something that, like, this was definitely something, I guess, to go back to the question of, like, what has that process been like for us, that it was something that came up for us somewhat early on. I'd say, like, within the first year or so is when we started realizing, like, shit, like, we really offer a somewhat narrow perspective on what this is, and pretty much all the other voices about polyamory out there are coming from basically the same perspective of mostly straight-ish, or at least, like, can pass for that, white people, right? And so that, I mean, that was a process that we started early, but it is, like, the thing that's still going on, and that even something, you know, as little as, like, getting this question, like, we go back into it of that, like, are we doing enough? Like, what else could we be doing, right? Like, it is, and to echo what Emily said, I do really appreciate that we have listeners who are willing to ask us those things, and especially
to tell us when we're wrong too.
Well, right, and yeah, especially to offer us, you know, their ideas or ways that we can do that better. Because while, like, yes, that's not anyone's job to tell us how to do that, we appreciate that, because I know that it is a risk. Like, if you listen to someone who makes content that you like, and there's something you notice that's just like, I like what you're doing, like, but you say these things that are belittling of something that I am, maybe you don't realize it, I don't know, because of, like what Dedeker was saying, what we see online is people just get defensive. You know, people, you know, like, we don't need to listen to you. Like, fuck off. I'll defend myself instead and talk about why you're a jerk, or why you're too sensitive, or whatever it is. Like, I get, like, that's the experience that, you know, even if we were to write into someone who says something that we feel like is marginalizing to a community that we're in, a lot of times that's the reaction you get. So, like, I understand that barrier of, like, is it worth my time of possibly getting shit on to express this feeling that I have? And so I really do appreciate the people who have done that with us. Because as hard as that is for us sometimes to hear it, I know it's hard for them to write it sometimes. Like, that's been a big part of us, of like, fostering that introspection and letting us know even what things to introspect
about, right? Yeah, good point.
because that's, I mean, that's part of the problem, right? Is that with any kind of privilege, is that you don't see it, right? And that, and until there's some way for you to learn that, you just can't, right? And so, like Dedeker said about finding ways to be more proactive about learning that rather than waiting for someone to tell us that, but trying to read people's things. And then the other part too is when people tell you about their experience of something, of just believing them instead of trying to tell them how it would be different if it was happening to you, and just like hearing people just and actually listen, believing them when they tell you that their experience is a certain thing, or that something is a certain way for them or has been a certain way for them. I think that is very powerful, and I would say, like, embarrassingly, is surprisingly hard to learn sometimes to just, like, believe people, because that's not always the most comfortable thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, and I guess to give a little bit of a call to action that I feel like is a very easy step in this direction, at least for people who are white or white passing privileged, is the thing is, like, as shitty as it is to be on the internet sometimes,
it's a terrible place.
It is, like, such an amazing time in history where, as far as opportunities to listen to people who are not like you, opportunities to get to listen to other people's experiences, especially people of color or who are queer or who are trans, it's so easy to go out and find those things. Like, just go, like, through hashtags. You can find Twitter accounts to follow. You can find people's blogs. You can find books to read. Like, it's compared to 50, 60 years ago, it's so easy to be able to actually kind of choose, like, hey, I'm going to listen to other people's experiences and kind of see what that's like. Like, we have those resources, and all it takes is literally just, like, that little bit of effort on your part to hunt down some social media, like, accounts or some spaces online where people are talking about these things, just to even be able to, like, listen and see. And that's, like, it's a very tiny first step, but it is a step in the right direction. And
educate yourself.
Yeah, that's, like, probably the easiest way. Yeah.
Thank you. That was
thank you so much.
Yeah, very necessary, great question.
So we did mention at the top of the show that, like, we lost a question, not as in, like, we misplaced it, but like it, we had to end up taking it out. And so that means that Kenzie gets another question. It's kind of feeling like the karaoke lineup of earlier.
I know. I was like, it's okay. Every other person is Kenzie, but that's also great.
I like attention.
And wonderful.
This is just like a fun one, a little less philosophical. I would really love to hear about a personal experience early in your polyamory journey that, like, really validated that you were on the right path. Like, a specific memory that you have in that moment, looking around at your life, like, thinking, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is where I'm supposed to be.
Hmm.
Can I go first?
Yeah.
Okay. This was very early in my polyamorous life, but this was when I was kind of, I was in a quad with the two people next to me and Brad. And basically, yes, I think that I had gone on a date with Brad and Jason Dedeker had gone on a date. And I think Dedeker went home for the evening. Mm-hmm. And Brad and I were at karaoke, of course, my favorite place. And Jace came by and Jace was, like, singing a song. And I was, like, laughing with Brad and he seemed really happy. And we had had a great date. And I looked up and saw Jace and, like, he was, like, super happy. And it was just like, fuck, like, I have my two partners here with me and everyone is okay. Mm-hmm. And we're all very happy, and, like, I'm also doing a thing that I love to do, and, like, there is what is better at this? If this isn't great, I don't know what is. To quote Kurt Vonnegut, I think.
What?
Yeah, I believe he said that at one point. Yeah, sure. I don't know, but yeah. Anyways, that was
it was too slow to fact check you. So. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, I know. Some patron's going to be like, nah, you're super wrong.
I was
going to
say, Mauricio will just edit it. He's like, actually, no.
Mauricio will chime in. But anyways, yeah, that was a very simple moment, but I remember my heart being so full. Yeah.
You got one?
No, you wanted to go next. Earlier.
Jace is like, I don't got one, sorry.
I'm eating strawberries. I'm sorry.
Okay. Jace is like, I still haven't been validated in my polyamory.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God. Aww.
I don't know, a couple moments stand out to me. The earliest one is a little bit fuzzy, but I think the earliest one was even at, like, just the first time that I think that I got to, like, I used the P word in describing myself to someone that I was dating. And
wait,
I think
which?
Oh,
really?
Polyamory. Polyamorous.
I'm sorry. That was a little slow on picking that
one
up.
What other P word?
I thought you were going to say, like, partner or something. I was like, what? Where are we going with this? Sorry.
No. Okay, so the first... No. Gosh.
It's okay, going to be okay.
And, you know, I was going to say...
It's going to be okay.
The altitude or something. The first time that I, like, used the term polyamory to describe myself and then also went on to kind of describe what that meant to me to someone that I... gone on a couple dates with, I think, at this point. And just the fact that they, for the first time, instead of this person being like, well, that's weird, I don't know if I could do that, and, like, asking a lot of questions with that tone of, like, not curiosity, but, like, you better defend yourself to me. Or the tone of, like, I'm really scared of this and I need to figure out what it means for me and how it affects me. But the first time that the person that I was on a date with was just like curious and also like really positive and also really like related to it. Like he hadn't had any experience, but for him, he was like, oh my goodness, wow. Like I've totally felt that way. And that makes so much sense. Like I think the first time that I had this like really positive reaction to my self-description of my identity, that was kind of like the first step, was like, oh, this isn't just an instant turn off to everyone else on the planet, which at that point it started to feel like it was. And then, yeah, I think after, like, for me, it's like a number of different tiny little milestones, you know, like the first time that I could, like, you know, come home from a date and then like go visit another partner and like talk about the date to my partner. And it was like all fine and good and like felt very normal. My first time ever feeling compersion was a huge moment of validation. And I'm not like a huge compersion junkie or anything. And like sometimes I worry that compersion is too much like polyamory PR and sometimes sets up some unrealistic ideals for people. But that aside, the first time I ever actually felt that way was actually in our quad experience. Mm-hmm. Was like when I saw my partner Brad like give Emily a kiss. And you know, up until that point, like even though I identified as polyamorous, like I still struggled for my first experience when someone else was also in love with someone else at the same time, and like really struggled with what that meant and how I felt about that. So it hadn't been easy up to that point, but then like I saw that and it was just like these fireworks went off inside of me and I didn't understand it. I was like, that, like my body shouldn't be feeling this way to seeing this. It's never felt this way before. And so I think for me, that experience was also this incredible, like, wow, like this does actually feel really good to me. It's not just in the moments that are more selfish where I feel like I'm have all the partners and no one else has any partners or anything like that. It is actually also feeling good to me even when I'm not directly benefiting from this arrangement. So I think that was it for me. What you got?
Manjus, you got one.
It's hard because I feel like it's just like this constant process. But I will say that one experience that I had that I really appreciated, and this was even earlier than Emily's, was right.
It's not a competition, for God's sake.
Seriously.
No, is right around the time that Emily and I opened up our relationship. You know, Emily felt like this is important that we tell our families about this, because, you know, they had known us together monogamously for a while, and she's like, we should tell them about this. And so
you were kind of like,
I had, you know, phone calls with my dad and my mom and my brother, and specifically my brother was the one, actually my brother and my mom were the ones that really surprised me, that my brother, his response was sort of like, oh, huh, that's interesting. Yeah, my your girlfriend learned about that in one of her courses in college. You should check out Sex at Dawn. That's actually a book that, you know, talks about some of that stuff from this. Right, like, whatever. And just that his response was so, like, didn't need to be like, oh, gosh, well, that's not something I want to do. Like, you better not be trying to convince me to do it. But still being like, oh yeah, like I've heard that that's a thing that people do, and that there's potentially some scientific backing for why that might be a thing we'd want to do, and whatever. So that was his response. And then, you know, my mom too, in her response at one point, you know, she was a little bit like, huh, so what? How does that work? Okay. And then, you know, I kind of explained it and she's like, huh, I don't know. I kind of wish I could do that. That sounds nice. But just that... Yeah, and that's not something that she's decided to do, but
that's all right too.
So for me, actually, like, I feel very lucky that I got to have those positive experiences. I've had other negative ones, but that those two were specifically that positive was sort of this like, oh, okay, I haven't come up with something that's so outlandish and terrible and immoral that no one could ever love me for wanting this. So for me, I was lucky that I got to have that experience in that way. And then after that, had lots of experiences with people saying it's terrible and immoral and you're an awful person and you're a cult leader and all that sort of stuff.
True story.
But, you know, Jace Lindgren, cult leader.
Yeah. Not yet.
What was that?
What was that?
Jeez.
Right? That's what we should be telling
them. Don't fight it.
It is where the money is at. Oh,
that's what they tell me.
Oh,
yeah.
Goodness me.
Yeah, don't.
We get to have cool, like, uniforms and stuff. No, that sounds good.
No.
Everyone drop the Kool-Aid.
No, but yeah, so I guess there have been many things along the way, though, because then, you know, there's also been periods of that being really hard, and then having those little unique situations of like being at you know, being at karaoke with
all these karaoke memories.
Another karaoke,
because karaoke is awesome.
Like being at karaoke with Dedeker and another guy that both of us were dating.
Oh yeah.
And right. You know, being able to like sing songs sort of at both of them while like they're being sweet with each other, and then I get to come up and hug them, and like doing that and just kind of that we were all that comfortable with it was like, that was another one of those experiences. Or even in other ways, even after the three of us were not all dating each other, being able to have the experience of like talking to people about us, and they're like, oh, so you guys are a triad and you do a podcast, especially other polyamorous people, right?
Hashtag being not like, a throuple.
Yeah.
We're not a throuple.
Not a throuple.
Or a triad. Like, we're actually this other thing. And for them to go, whoa, of that.
That is crazy. What?
Right. Like, yeah, then maybe on the other side of them saying, yeah, that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even believe it. That's amazing. And me remembering other relationships from the past and being like, there's no way that could have happened. Like, yeah. There's no way. Not that that can't happen with, you know, former partners and friends and stuff in monogamous relationships, but for me, it could not have happened. So I think that was another one of those really cool validating moments.
So it seems like the key is karaoke, really.
I mean, yeah. All of you I think you're on the right sung track. Beautifully today. So
yeah, the karaoke earlier was great.
I know. It was so good.
We do have one question that's not a question.
Yeah, that was anonymously submitted.
Do we want to have someone read it?
Yeah, this was anonymously submitted, and they said, I want someone else to read it on the show. So, and it's short.
Do we have a volunteer to read?
I'll read it if I can read it in a funny voice.
Sure, yeah. Okay. Love it.
Sorry, Trevor.
Oh, no, wait.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I didn't
see
you.
Well, Trevor, can you one up the funny voice bit?
Is it a funny question? I don't want to do it.
Well, we're not going to give it away.
Okay,
It's short. It's very short.
Well, it's an anonymous voice.
Go for it.
It's two sentences.
Just do an anonymous voice, whatever that is.
I don't know.
Whatever you do, you got to commit to it, though.
It's very bright, and which way am I?
It's the one that says anonymous.
In green there.
Okay, I'll read it like this.
Oh, okay.
Emily, your voice is like liquid gold in my ears. You are an amazing goddess.
Thank you.
Not
a question.
Oh man.
Okay, are you sure?
But you are though, Emily. You are.
Oh jeez. Goodness.
Can we do a couple takes?
Yeah, does someone else want to try? We'll do auditions.
No. Oh my goodness.
Dedeker's like, no.
I will have one more take. One more take. Because now it feels like it's just indulgent on Emily's part.
Only on that first step.
Only that first step, yeah.
Alright, where is it?
The green anonymous.
Yeah. Emily.
Oh wow.
That's good.
Your voice is like liquid gold in my ear. You are an amazing goddess.
Thank you.
That's nice.
Wow. That was beautiful.
That was
both
that
of you.
Yeah.
And now, like Mauricio, if you could edit those two on top of each other, like the creepy, like the sci-fi voice, you know, that's the...
Nice.
And then Emily can set that as her alarm clock in the morning. You know?
I mean, I appreciate the affirmation. Like,
yeah, they'll pump you
I
up before
that.
Any audition or something.
No, totally. Because I definitely, mostly what people say about my voice is like, it's so unusual. And I'm like, yeah, I know.
No, I'm really uncomfortable with this.
It's okay. I have had enough affirmation for one day, but thank you. Thank you all. That was
well, do we feel
that
like
was
we
my
have,
limit.
We have some time, a little bit of time?
I know.
For maybe like one or two? More?
Yeah, there was someone in the back who had a question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please. Come on down.
You in the multi-amory shirt.
I see that multi-amory shirt.
Ooh, uniforms. I was talking about those a second ago.
That's true.
You're right. There have been a couple around today.
So I live with a partner that I've lived with for about 6 years, and she's moving to another country to go to grad school for an indeterminate amount of time, but at least a year. And I was wondering if you guys had advice and kind of thoughts on how you transition a relationship into that long distance style relationship.
Wow.
Ooh boy. Do we ever.
I mean, considering these two sitting next to me are like half the year long distance.
Yeah, it's
right.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, gosh. I mean, I went through a very similar thing where a couple years ago, Dedeker said, you know,
bye.
I'm getting rid of all my things and traveling the world, and I'd want to do that on my own.
And I don't know when I'm coming back.
And I don't know when I'm coming back, maybe never. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I've been there. And it sucked. That wasn't a fun experience. So I'm not going to say, oh, just do this and it's all fine. But as far as transitioning that, honestly, a lot of the tools that we talk about on the show, like things like Radar, help a lot with that, because I found that in the past for me in trying to do long distance relationships, even if it was like, oh, we're going to be, you know, temporarily long distance for this reason, that there's a couple things. One is that, especially since sometimes it can be hard to coordinate when you're going to talk to each other, or when you're going to video chat with each other, especially with time zones, right? But even if it's not that can be challenging to figure out how to schedule. And so that time gets limited. Kind of to go back to Kenzie's question from the beginning, that time can get limited. And so I find like there's two sides. On the one hand, you like never want to talk about anything hard or heavy because we get such precious little time. Let's just try to enjoy it. And having something like Radar gives you that, like, well, I know we're going to talk about this once a month or once every 2 weeks or however often we decide that's going to work for us. So you know you have that. So if something comes up, you could think like, okay, well, our Radar is only 2 weeks away. Maybe I'll write it down and I'll wait to bring it up then. So you don't have that pressure of like, do I bring this up and ruin like this one time we get to talk this week or whatever it is. And then on the other side, a very, you know, armchair psychologist theory that I came up with years ago was that when we're long distance with someone, there's a certain like just emotional intensity that we don't get to have with them because mm-hmm. we don't have like physical touch or we don't have, you know, those sorts of physical intimacy that have those kind of hormonal reactions and like cause feelings of any kind in us. And so I think that sometimes we can actually, on the other hand, have more serious conversations while we're long distance, because then we get to feel something. Because then, right, even if it's because I'm crying and I'm upset or I'm whatever it is that you're feeling at least. And that's the thing that it's hard to feel like you're not getting. Again, very armchair psychologist. I have no backing for this whatsoever.
Well, except for a bunch of years of being long distance with your partner.
My own personal experience, sure. Yeah, that maybe that's what was going on. But I think also having something like Radar, having a regular check-in also gives you the opportunity to then try different stuff. And so like with Dedeker and myself, it was, okay, you know, during the Radar talk about like, let's try a different video chat service, or, hey, I have an idea about how we could play this particular video game together remotely. That's not a two-player game, but I think I figured out a way we can do a screen sharing thing. So that'll work. Or, you know, we've spent a lot of our time getting really stressed out over these video games we've been playing. Like, what if instead this we tried, you know, watching movies together and talking about those, or
we
what
talk
if,
about more serious things than just like video games and movies.
But the point I'm trying to make though is not about just you should play video games and watch movies all the time. But the point I'm trying to make is that it gives you the chance to try different things. And then it's like, we'll try this for a month and see how it goes. And it's like, okay, like I still wish we had more of this. And then it's like, okay, let's try another thing. Rather than that kind of like, do I bring it up now? Do I, like, I don't want to mess up the plans we already have. It kind of gives you a way to do that. And that, once we started doing that, helped a ton with all sorts of different things, like finding designated texting time with each other, or just all sorts of different things that we've tried that we then will adapt now, depending on what time zones we're in relative to each other, or what our internet access is like, or things like that.
Yeah, I've definitely found since now I am in a weird version of life where it's like half the year I'm long distance with one partner and then the other chunk of the year I'm long distance with a different partner, that like having a regular check-in is seriously paramount. Not just for negotiating things or trying things, but also because the fact that like when you are long distance, you lose a little bit of that, you know, being in each other's day-to-day lives. And it gives you a chance to just like catch up, you know, like the part of the Radar where you're sitting and looking at your Google Calendar. where you can be like, oh, I didn't tell you about this like silly dinner party I went to 2 weeks ago, but let me tell you about that now. And it's not like it's necessarily relevant to you, but it's me filling you in on my life and bringing you into that space intimately that you would have gotten when we're living together. But now it's a little bit interrupted. Just the other thing I was going to say, I guess this is kind of like post-transition when you actually are long distance. Send a lot more selfies than you think is appropriate.
Yeah,
and that's there's a good one. There is a reason for that. Like, this is something that comes up in therapy. The thing is that, like, there is a part of your brain that can't tell the difference between a real person's face and like a picture of a person's face.
Huh.
Like, there's like your prefrontal cortex knows the difference, but there's like a deeper part of your brain that doesn't know the difference. And so where it often comes up in therapy is like if you have a bunch of unresolved stuff with your father, for instance, but your father's dead, then you can like put a picture up and like talk out your stuff. And it feels silly, but it actually kind of unlocks some stuff in your brain and in your emotions that wouldn't otherwise just thinking about it. And the same thing with relationships, that like do a lot more FaceTime or Skyping than you think is appropriate, even if it's short calls, even if it's just like, you know, I'm on my lunch break, let's just talk for 20 minutes, but let's do it FaceTime. And same thing with just like send way more selfies than you think are appropriate because of triggering that, like kind of hacking that part of your brain to get those kind of pheromones released, at least in part, that would be if you actually were together, because that part of your brain doesn't know the difference. So
The last thing I was going to say, and I'm sure that you do a great job of this, but just try to be happy for your partner as well, that they get to do that. Because I think so often, like, we will internalize it and be like, oh my God, you're leaving me. Mm-hmm. This is all going to become about how hard this is for me in this moment, instead of being genuinely happy for them that they get this opportunity. I'm sure you're amazing at it already, but just
I'm sure
to
amazing
put it out
at
there,
being happy.
Yeah, I'm sure you're amazing at being there for your partner. But mm-hmm. Yeah, just something to remember.
So, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to info@multiamory.com. You can send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can also leave us a voicemail at everyone together 678-MULTI-05. Oh, I love
that was
it so much.
Good.
Or you can also leave us a voice message on Facebook to support our show and join our private Facebook community and come to awesome private Patreon-only events like this. Go to patreon.com/multiamory. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Emily Matlack, and me, Dedeker Winston. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. Full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Emily, your voice is like liquid gold in my ears. You are an amazing goddess.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.